And welcome to WDAY Weather and Ag and Focus. Want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. 106 in the afternoon. Temperatures are a balmy 6 below with a wind chill of 19 below. Thankfully, winds are pretty light out there, but boy, it is. We're stuck in the deep freeze. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki alongside with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, are you sick of the cold weather? I know I'm sick of hearing people complain about it, but
it's not so much the cold weather, but when everybody says, "Are you cold? What do you think of the weather?" It's February,
right?
It's always cold. Calm down. I mean, yeah, I haven't worn this many layers since I was swaddled as a child, but whatever. It's going to be fine. We're going to come out of this okay, and hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, well, we got to give it about another 10 days before we can really break out of the icy grip of Mother Nature. But I'll tell you what, did some digging on some on how cold it is this year compared to last year. So far this year, we've had 30 days below zero. Last year, for the whole winter, we only had 11. So we still have a ways to go to finish this winter, and regardless, I mean, if you're thinking it's a colder winter, facts back it up. It's a much colder winter this winter than last winter. We were really, really spoiled last winter for sure. And the cold air is going to stick around, it looks like, for the next week to 10 days as we've got that Arctic air kind of locked in place over the area. We're sitting at 6 below right now. We're only going to move up to about 2 below. With light north-northwest winds, and then another bitterly cold night tonight with cold weather advisories in effect, with the lows tonight between 20 and 25 below. Our coldest night of the season so far is 23 below. I think we'll come pretty close to at least tying or beating that tomorrow morning. Not something we should really be too proud of. And then Thursday, highs right around zero. Clouds increase late. And then Friday, clouds thicken up. We'll see light snow overspread the area Friday afternoon into Friday night. It does turn breezy. East-southeast winds 10 to 25. Highs in the mid-teens on Friday. That'll be our warmest day over the next 10. Because then the winds ramp up Friday night and Saturday. If you're going out with your sweetheart for Valentine's Day Friday night, kind of keep up to date on the road conditions, because although we're not expecting a lot of snow, an inch, some spots might get a touch more than that. When we're going to get the northwest winds 20 to 30 and gusty Friday night, it could get a little slippery around here going into Saturday. Saturday is going to be a windy, raw day with highs only between 0 and 5 above, and then we're below 0 for highs Sunday and Monday. We go into the second phase of our LRC cycle around the 21st, give or take a day or so. And what that will do is, our weather turns in, instead of from the north, we'll have our upper level winds turning in from the northwest. And what that does is bring clipper systems into the area. And that's when we start to go on kind of a roller coaster ride of temperatures. We'll warm up ahead of the clipper systems and cool down behind them. But at least we're not stuck in this consistent 2 weeks of sub-zero weather, it seems like. So there is light at the end of the tunnel. That'll last for a couple weeks, and then we go into our stormy part of the LRC cycle again as we head towards mid-March. So we'll see a little break through mid-March, and then we'll see what happens mid-March through about the second week in April. Because the stormy part of the LRC cycle this go around was down into the Central Plains and into the Great Lakes. Now, there's about a 60 to 70% chance that should shift back north and affect our area like it did in November as we head into March and April. So that's the way it's looking right now. And in the process of updating our LRC calendar through the end of March and April. We're going to redo Marches because we're getting different signals from our LRC now. So fingers crossed, because we do want that moisture coming up here, especially March and April before planting season starts.
Well, I'm going to lean towards April, because I got some folks that want a calf in March. They don't want the rain on the calves.
Yeah, good point. Good point. No doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, we're gonna take that moisture when it's time and when we're ready to get it, and that's not going to be a problem for many people. And this weather update is sponsored by Equitable AgriFinance. Thanks to Ryan Bonesack for all that he does to make sure that long-term fixed rates for farmland financing are available to both farms and ranches. Again, that is Equitable AgriFinance. And they will reach out to you if you just give them a call, 701-261-6529. Brian will take the time to visit through your operation and see what they can do to make sure it's running most efficiently and how they can help. So great big thank you to them. And also, Ryan hasn't, he has been one of those people who hasn't called me to say, how's the weather? Is it cold? How do you feel about it? I don't care, Ryan. You're cold too.
You know, I love when my relatives in Arizona shoot me a text message. Hey, how cold is it up there? I'm like, you know exactly how cold it is up here. You're just doing this to rub it in.
So I do want to give a big shout out to Anamoose, North Dakota. Yesterday, I was in Anamoose. I was a speaker there on behalf of the McHenry County Crop Improvement Association. And about partway through our discussion, I heard the pagers go off, and a bunch of guys had to get up and leave. And about 10 minutes later, another round of pagers went off, and more people had to leave. And here's why. That local fire department got paged out for a shop fire.
And oh, no.
The second round of pagers was mutual aid being called from the local community of Drake. So that was two fire departments paged out for a shop fire. Kudos to all of those people who are our local volunteer fire departments, ambulance squads, and so much more. But more importantly, if you have ever tried to fight fire in a -2 degree situation, which is what it was at Anamoose yesterday afternoon, I can't begin to say thank you for the fact that they all go out there. They're freezing, even in their turnout gear. There's water dripping, freezing everywhere. Just God bless for the things that they do. And my understanding, it was a shop fire. Nobody wants to see loss of property. I did not hear of any people that were harmed or injured in the situation. But unfortunately, in these cold temperatures with so many furnaces and whatnot working extra, it's not uncommon to see that happen. And again, thank you to all the emergency services people out there.
Yeah, it's you know, you don't think about that a lot of times this time of the year when there are emergencies like that. And boy, that's those are hardy individuals, to say the least, that's for sure.
That is the first time I've had fire pagers go off during a discussion that I was leading. But it did make me reminiscent of the fact that I remember I was in college and my dad would call me and say, I'm going to a meeting today. Could you, and cell phones were pretty new. He says, could you call me about such and such time to get me out of there? Because I think by then I'll have gotten what I need and I just want to look like I have to leave. No, Dad. No, I will not be that excuse for you. That was a super try on your part, but no.
Well, I'm glad that wasn't the reason for your sake, right?
No, that's exactly right. So interesting to note, as Wednesdays are a day that I often talk about technology going on in agriculture. So here's one that maybe you haven't heard about yet, and it is from MIT, the robotic bee. Let that sink in for a second. MIT has developed advanced robotic insects, a bee that can help with not artificial insemination, but artificial pollination, particularly in high-tech vertical farms. If you remember back, we had a guest with us not long ago where we talked about vertical farming using indoor facilities, whether it's those empty cargo containers, whether it's empty stores. I see these in urban and suburban areas where maybe there's an old Best Buy or Target that gets turned into vertical farming. They're raising vegetables, leafy greens, etc., indoors because they want to be closer to their outlets, getting it into cities faster and helping to eliminate food deserts in a variety of areas. But you can't just turn a beehive loose in a building. Pretty sure that doesn't work real well with the AC system. And so what the MIT is working on is tiny robots that are bees. They're lighter than a paperclip. They can hover for 1,000 seconds. And just for fun, they can do high-speed acrobatic maneuvers.
Oh, jeez.
But they would be there in these farming situations, particularly if it was like fruits that needed pollination, and the bee could do it on behalf of live bees like you would see in an actual outdoor farming scenario. So the robotic bee from MIT, I just found, was a pretty neat discussion about something new that's going on. These are prototypes. They are not yet in the marketplace, but we will see what they can do for us down the road. Never know when you might need one.
Interesting. wasn't there a bee shortage a few years back?
The 2007, 2008, I think, was the peak of the colony collapse, which never really has had a good definition. There have been a lot of symptoms of what it might have been, but there's not been conclusive evidence as to exactly what it was. And we've seen a big rebound since then. An article I recently read talked about, particularly for honeybees, they're at some of their highest population points that we've had in decades. And honeybees, right, are seeing a resurgence because people want to eat more local. So they really like local honeys as sweeteners, that type of thing. We have quite a thriving bee industry in North Dakota. We are number one in honey production across the U.S. And I've been told by beekeepers that it used to be they took the hives all out to California and the southern states to rent them out for the winter months to do pollination. But as more crops have become self-pollinating, there hasn't necessarily been a need for that on a large-scale effort as we once did. Interesting changes in the market and what we do genetically. Yeah. So we're going to be joined today by someone who's very much hands-on in the seed and growing crop industry, and that will be Scott Sanders. Scott is with Peterson Farm Seed, and he was recently elected president of Independent Professional Seed Association. Sounds like a bit of a mouthful. But more importantly, Scott's going to explain what that is. We're going to talk about the history of Peterson Farm Seed in the region. They are well known up in the Prosper, North Dakota area by many. And it's just fun to hear their origination story, how Scott came to be a part of that organization. And then, of course, what this new presidency might mean for Scott as we go into the next year. But first, we've got the markets from the American Ag Network. Let's go hear what's happening on a live cattle basis right now. And when we come back, we'll visit with our guest, Scott. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for being here. Maybe you are taking the afternoon to get some shop work done, might be throwing an extra load of laundry in, or you're diligently working at your desk. For those of you who are eyeball deep and getting ready for tax preparation, good luck. God bless. That's all I can say right there. But if you are considering new insurance needs, don't forget to check out JLA Insurance. Nate Thorsrud is not only the owner, but he is a farmer on his family farm at Grandin, North Dakota. And he has insurance roots very deep in North Dakota fields since 2004. He knows what farmers need, well, because he is one. Family-founded crop and hail insurance agency, he will not sell you what you don't need. So check out JLA Insurance. Call Nate at 701-371-0311. Or if you missed that, you can always send me an email, ag@flagfamily.com, and I would be thrilled to help pass on that information. Speaking of thrilling, we have a guest in studio today with Dean, and our guest is Scott Sanders. Scott is with Peterson Farm Seed. Scott, how are you today?
Hey, I'm great. Appreciate you having me. You're flying fast and loose with the thrilling comment, but we'll go with it.
Hey, we're just getting started. This could be a whole shock and awe situation by the end of the hour. Boy. Never know, Scott.
All right. Let's go. I do want to hear more about those robotic bees. That sounds really exciting.
Doesn't that, though?
Yeah.
Okay, so I thought that was kind of cool. I want to see one. I haven't found a picture of it yet. Maybe I just have to do a little more Google search, but I want to see how big that thing is. And, you know, what is it? Does it carry the pollen on tiny legs? What does it look like? Is it yellow and black? We'll find out, right?
Well, I can't decide if that's more exciting or scary. I mean, I came from the aerospace and defense world. That was more my background. So hearing about all these new things since I've been out of that world is fascinating. So, yeah, we'll have to talk offline about that. I love that.
Okay, so we will, and I have a ton of questions back to aerospace, but we'll get there later. So, sure. Scott, tell us about Peterson Farm Seed. A lot of people are familiar with seeing your brand because Carl's been in commercials. We see the pickups out on the road, but who are Peterson Farm Seed?
Yeah, you know, Carl and Julie Peterson started the company 30 years ago, and as they've communicated many times, it was really by accident. Carl's a farmer. He's really lived in the same spot his whole life, as he will tell you. He's never had a real job. So as a farmer and a wheat farmer back in the 90s, wheat scab was a big issue. And they really bought a piece of equipment to help clean their wheat and started doing that for their neighbors. And that really is the story of Peterson Farm Seed, is helping out the neighbor. I mean, one of our biggest philosophies is we really do everything we can for the grower. Now, certainly we work through dealers, and that's how we've expanded our company, but been around for 30 years. We operate in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and we operate mainly in corn, soy, and wheat. We've got some other things going on in terms of high-value commodity contracts that really help our friends up north and out west. But Carl and Julie really built a brand that made it enticing for me to want to come back to North Dakota. They do things right. In fact, my first day as general manager, Carl said, whatever you do, just do what is right. Don't pay attention to what we've done in the past. Policies, you know, certainly stay within the law, but do right by our customers and our employees. And it was really important for me to hear that, especially putting our employees on the same pedestal as our customer, because they're very important to what we do.
Scott, if I'm not mistaken, it's been roughly 8, maybe 10 years that you've been general manager at Peterson. Would that be fair?
I've been with the company just about 9 years. I believe January 2019, I was promoted to general manager.
So what's changed in the time frames? As you said, you came from aerospace and this whole other world. What have you watched happen in the nearly 10 years in the seed industry?
You know, that's a funny question, and I know you're very familiar with agriculture, Bridget. It seems like every year I've been in it, I say to Carl, I'm really kind of waiting for a normal, typical year, and he just kind of looks at me with a side eye and says, good luck with that. Every year is different. In my time, so many things have changed in terms of the technology. Obviously, you know, BT corn and corn traits have been around for, you know, 20 plus years. Soy genetics are really taking over the region and have for a long time. I mean, I grew up in western North Dakota, grew up in Minot, and I never really seen a cornfield, and I didn't know what a soybean was. So that is, when you look at the soybean acres, I think we're one of the largest producing states, the fifth largest producing states for soybeans in the country, I believe. And we have corn from every corner. I think that's the biggest difference that I've seen over my time in terms of where the crops are. But then technology, right? You hear about autonomous vehicles, autonomous farming, precision farming, the drones that, you know, again, in my past life were certainly part of my everyday existence. But as you get into farming and all of the different mapping and thermal imaging that can be done from the air, that is really, for lack of a better phrase, been on steroids over the last 8 to 10 years. So the fire hose is not more than 6 inches from my face most days.
Wow. That's busy. And Scott, what sets your business or your company, what sets it apart from other seed companies out there?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And I would tell you, first and foremost, it's our people. And I think that's a cliched answer. But I can tell you that when Carl and Julie built the company, they intentionally built a culture that was about service and about quality. And it's not just lip service. We do everything different in terms of how we produce our beans, how we treat those beans through the plant, through the facility, package, and get them out to our customers. So our differentiation in the marketplace and even within independent seed companies is really our high level of service and our flexibility. But I would put our products up against any of them, including the multinationals. One of the things as I've become more involved in the industry, and you mentioned the Independent Professional Seed Association, I appreciate that. It is a mouthful. I kind of say IPSA or IPSA. I've gotten to know so much more about our industry, and one thing is true about agriculture. What is true here 5 miles down the road is not true. Every field is different. Agronomically, things are vastly different. And then when you talk about companies that are located in the I states, they live in a completely different world than we do. So I think that how we differentiate is we really focus on our region. Not really interested in growing too far geographically because we are who we are in the area we're at, and we can service our customers, and we really do focus on the grower. That is something in our product guide that's been there for 30 years. And I love this saying, and Carl's, you guys know Carl, he's fantastic at these marketing, words, but they're not just words. We would be happy. We will sell no seed that we wouldn't be happy to plant on our own farm. And that truly is a mantra that exists throughout all, you know, 68 of our employees today.
That's incredibly true. And that's why Peterson is so well known in the region, is what happens within Peterson Farm Seed is what's happening within Peterson's farm, because that's it's right. Within this region, it's keeping an eye on what's happening around here. And some of those, I think, updated bits of information, like you said, in 30 years time, things that have changed. We had the opportunity to go out and tour your facility here 2 summers ago when Peterson Farm Seed was a sponsor for Here We Grow. And thank you for doing that. One of the things that was most fascinating in videos that customers watched was the seed eye sorter, where literally technology has come into what you're doing in the seed industry. It's no longer just dropping seed into a bag.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. The technology, when I first joined the company, I thought, well, hey, we put seed in the ground, we hope for good weather, and then we do it all over again. And I couldn't have been more off in my assessment of the complexity. But when you talk about, you know, we have color sorters, we have image sorters, which we have gravity sorters. So by weight, by size, by color, you really separate the high quality seed from the stuff that we're not willing to sell. And I appreciate you bringing that up, Bridget, because that is a differentiator for us. We shoot for 94% germ on our soybeans, and 90% is the industry standard. But that extra 4%, as Carl will say, means you have to do everything different from the contracting of your acres with your production growers all the way through to the delivery of that seed. And so many of our growers don't see that, and that's probably by design. They don't need to, but what they do need to know is that 4% germination and everything we do means they're getting a higher quality cut of the bean than they would from a lot of other seed companies.
So all of those things adding up, what's happening at Peterson Farm Seed really is going to lead us into the discussion about the Independent Professional Seed Association, which Scott just became president of recently. So we're going to visit about that after we touch on our bottom of the hour news. When we return, I want to hear what really is IPSA, because I don't know for sure. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, where an incredibly astute listener, as well as a couple folks in studio, made sure to send us pictures of the robotic bee. So we now have a picture of that so we can take a look at it if we'd like. Thanks for listening, Nick, and for sending that over. I appreciate it. I'll see if I can't get that onto our Facebook page later today so you can all see it. But we have with us in studio today our guest, Scott Sanders. Scott is with Peterson Farm Seed, but also was just elected as Independent Professional Seed Association President. So, Scott, what does that mean?
Still trying to figure that out. You know, IPSA has been an organization around a long time, and Carl and Julie have been involved for years. In a nutshell, what IPSA does is provide a voice for the independent seed companies in the country. And quite frankly, we have South American, Mexican companies, we have Canadian companies that are members. But on our own, Peterson Farm Seed doesn't have a large voice, right? There's the Bayers, the Cortevas, the Syngentas, the large multinationals that obviously swing a much bigger stick than an independent seed company. But when you start to combine over 100 different seed companies throughout the country, we do have a voice. We represent 25 to 30% of the marketplace. So this organization exists to basically stump for all of the independent seed companies and what's best for that sector. Because as any farmer will tell you, what an independent seed company brings to the industry is our options and choices. And they're a huge part of the market. And so we get together as a board on a monthly basis. We get together as an industry once a year. We were just in Palm Springs for our conference. And it's really an opportunity to bring, like I said, over 100 different companies together who really have the same goal. Now, we may compete within the regions, but we've got states or companies in the I states and all the way from East Coast to West Coast, North and South. So it represents a large group of industry experts within the seed industry.
So within those experts, are you talking about new traits and genetics, or are you focusing more on policy decisions and how you can be effective at, say, levels with USDA or EPA?
You know, historically, we haven't been as involved on the policy side. I think that's changing a bit, just given the market dynamics with independent seed companies compared to the multinationals. So I think with those dynamics, we have gotten more involved in Washington, D.C. and what's best for the ag industry, specifically through the specter of an independent seed company. We represent thousands of employees who are very important to the markets they serve and the communities that they reside in. So that's very important from the policy side. But typically, we represent more of the voice for traits and genetics and what represents the best choice for the farmer. And then specifically, the IPSA board gets involved at the relational level with all of the licensors within those big multinationals. So we have meetings quite regularly with those companies to make sure we're carrying the independents' water, letting them know what's important and what we need to succeed and thrive in our markets.
So I heard you mention the U.S. primarily, but also a little bit of Mexico, Canada. Do you have interactions with folks internationally as well? Are there organizations in the EU or other areas that would be similar to IPSA?
You know, I'm not aware. That's a great question, Bridget. I'm not aware of any similar organizations that are represented like that outside of the U.S. I mean, as you know, the U.S. agriculture industry is the largest in the world, the best producing farmers in the world. So I'm not sure. So I don't want to say no, but I would bet that, we are the only organization that focuses on the independent seed company in the world.
I would venture a guess you probably are. And, you know, some of the things that probably hit your perspective as well or will is when we talk about possibility of disease coming in from other countries too. Maybe that hasn't been a focus for you yet, but I feel like that's a rising concern amongst seed as well as livestock. Has that touched your radar yet at all? Have you heard your other independents talking about such things?
We hear less on the international side because there are such stringent regulations and rules regarding global trade and what can come in and out of the pipeline, if you will. But as we at Peterson have gotten more involved in the IP, the intellectual property type products that are out there, those are closed loop cycles. So what is grown and contracted has to stay outside of the normal commercial product pipeline. So there's a lot of policy and rules in place to keep that from happening. I would say we deal more with within the United States, pressures moving in. You know, we've got the Liberty thing came about, I would say 10, 15 years ago and was a huge deal that came up from the South. We're seeing more rootworm pressure than we ever have coming in from the South and especially from the East. So we don't focus as much, and I haven't, you know, if you had Carl sitting here, he would talk much more intelligently about maybe things on the international side, but we really do focus and hear more about, I would say, within 10 to 15 states and what pressures our farmers are facing. And on the IPSA side, I have not heard of anything coming from the international that has been a huge issue.
And Scott, I'm feeling pretty positive about that.
We've got an email question here, Scott, asking, does the current administration that's in effect have any positive or negative outcome over the next 4 years in the seed and farm industry? I mean, obviously, we've got to get the farm bill passed.
Sure. That's always, you know, the biggest question is the farm bill. But a lot of questions I hear regarding the Trump administration is what effect does that have on our industry? And I think that debate is still ongoing. I know from an economic standpoint, Trump's 4 years created some of the lowest soybean commodity prices we've had in the history of the market. And that's because of the pressure and the trade war going on with China. Right. As we put tariffs and taxes and we go to battle with China economically, they will choose one of their leverages is they will buy their beans elsewhere. And those will come from Brazil and South America, which is our largest competitor on the global side of things for soybeans. So when they don't take our beans and we can't export, our supply goes up, demand goes down, and so with it goes the price.
Right.
But I do think this time around I have some pretty positive vibes coming in, I think, from the D.C. side. I think they're going to be a little bit smarter for the farmer. There was a lot of subsidies paid out to farmers in the 2016 to 2020 time frame to make up for those things. So I know the administration is very aware of the effect they have on the American farmer. I do think the American farmer is a priority in the administration. That's just my opinion. I'm not talking to any insiders on that. But clearly, they think it's important. The question is when Trump pulls on a string of one side of the sweater, does he know exactly what happens on the other side of that sweater? So I think the jury is still out.
But, that's a good analogy.
Yeah, I'm optimistic about the American farmer in the next 4 years.
Good.
Well, and if there's something that folks are wondering about, certainly in the seed business right now, it's economics, right? That's a concern.
Yeah.
But I also am getting more questions about something like tar spot, which we now have a confirmed case in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. And I would venture a guess that you gather information from other areas and are able to bring that back to North Dakota when it comes to genetics and so forth, because tar spot can be devastating in a multitude of states. Hopefully, you guys at Peterson Farm Seed and as IPSA together are making sure we're well protected from that disease.
Yeah, no question. And we get reports of those, and our agronomists and our head of product are certainly aware of those things. And we work with over a dozen different genetic companies that are really located throughout the country. So, we get up to speed pretty quick on those types of things. Thankfully, we haven't seen a bunch of it in our territory. But you're right, Bridget. It's coming, and it's certainly something we're going to have to deal with through the genetic pool.
All right. Spring's going to come. Are you looking for employees? Is this your plug to say we need some bodies, or y'all good over there for labor?
You know, we're pretty good. I know, not to put a plug in for Peterson, we're always looking for great CDL drivers, right? You can never have too many of those, and we continue to increase our fleet in terms of getting seed out where it needs to be on time. That's super important to our farmer. As I mentioned, they are the focus. And then I would say one of the areas we are going to really bolster in the next 6 to 12 months is our agronomic team. Now, we've always led with agronomy, but we are going out in a concerted effort to hire, I would say, 3 to 4 more agronomists within our region. Now, that could be north, south, east, or west. Agronomically, things, as I mentioned, change pretty quickly. When you talk about whether you're in the north or the south or east versus west. So, we are, I would say, actively looking for the top talent when it comes to agronomy. And one of the things that I've wanted to do for a while now is build out that agronomy team. And we've hired a new director of product, which is going to be the figure, or I should say the spearhead, with regards to our research, our agronomy, and our product selection. And I'm really anxious to get him going and to build a bigger agronomy team underneath him, because when you get more agronomists, you have more support for all of the acres that are out there. And that's something that's important to us.
Those eyes can't be replicated, whether it's by robotic bees or drones or anything like that. You still need that human touch.
No, you're 100% right. And we always say you can't compete with boots on the ground. And that is something I believe will never go away. Thankfully.
So, thankfully. All right. Take a look over your shoulder. I see snow. I see cold. What's your prediction on when we're going to the field to start planting corn, Scott?
We were just talking about that before we came on air.
I am not ever the smartest guy in the room, but I am smart enough to know I'm not going to make a prediction on that. This latest round of snow gave me a little bit of positive vibes. I'm hoping for some more. We could use some moisture throughout the region. I think we're technically in a drought cycle. I hope that we can get rolling. But our biggest concern every year is not really the date. I mean, certainly the earlier the better for the farmer. But soil temps are so important. You know, when you put that seed in the ground, and certainly as a seed company, we worry about that every year. I don't know, just talking with Dean a little bit before we started, he says we got a lot of snow coming. So I'm hoping we can mid-April to late April, we start seeing some tractors and planters get rolling. So I don't know. I know ideally we'd love it to happen in April, and probably the latter half.
And I was telling Scott that the stormy part of the LRC cycle, which we are in right now, which will end late next week, it's been to our south, which is good for the Central Plains because they have had very dry conditions. Now, extrapolate that 42 days out, so mid-March to the beginning of April, that stormy cycle should lift north here, and then that returns again as we head late April into early May. So we'll have that window about mid-April, about the third week. We'll have about a 14-day stretch there, where we should have some drier weather preceding, with wet before and then wet after.
See, Bridget, you just, as the point guard, that should have just been thrown to Dean. He has a much more intelligent answer than I do.
Well, I'm just thinking, I want rain at the beginning, as every older farmer will tell you, let's get the frost out of the ground. I want sunshine, warm temperatures to bring the soil temps up. I want to plant, and I want rain so that after that, my corn pops out of the ground and I'm off into the races. So that would be ideal.
And I will say this really quickly, with the technology and the genetics we have in the seed today, we can, I mean, we've seen it in the past couple of years where we've had shortened growing seasons. Guys have had bumper crops, right? So the technology is there. I think patience is the word of the day, making sure that seed gets in the ground when it is the appropriate temperature and moisture levels. So yeah, I don't have a goal of getting in early. I just want all of the seed to go in. I don't like to see empty acres.
I'm okay with that. Yep. Yes. All right. Scott, thank you for joining us today. Very much appreciate it.
Oh, thank you guys for
having
Scott.
Me.
Absolutely. So stay tuned. We got weather, right, Dean?
That's right. We'll recap weather. We'll hit a couple of ag topics and a little bit more coming up after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag and Focus, 1:54 in the afternoon. We're looking at generally partly cloudy skies across the area. Some spots have mostly cloudy skies and temperatures still below zero, 4 below here at the studio, and pretty similar temperatures up and down the valley. A little warmer to the north where it's 1 below, so it really doesn't matter. It's cold out. Thankfully, winds are light, and we're going to remain in the deep freeze. Again, we do have a cold weather advisory and warnings issued for the valley and points westward for tonight. It's basically the same we've seen the last two nights with temperatures dipping down to about 20 to 25 below and wind chills 35 to 45 below. And then finally tomorrow we should make it to zero, some spots even a few degrees above zero. And then Friday we bump it up into the teens, but we will see some light snow coming into the area as we head into Friday afternoon into Friday night. Probably picking up, our latest models are pumping out about an inch of snow, which is not a big deal. And then it's cold all next week. I mean, temperatures pretty much what we've seen over the last few days lasts through most of next week. We are seeing signs of that pattern changing around the 21st. That puts us into phase two of our LRC cycle, where we get these clipper systems coming in. No big storms, but a little bit here and a little bit there, and slightly warmer temperatures than what we've been through. And then I'm putting together the calendar for March and April and into May. Should have that done sometime late next week. But it does look like as this stormy part of the, as we were talking earlier, the stormy part of the LRC cycle, when that comes back mid-March, I think it's March 12th, something like that, 15th, somewhere around mid-March through that first week in April, there's about a 60 to 70% chance that the stormy cycle that's been, the storms are going to be there. We know that for sure. But it's the other parts, like the Arctic Oscillation, does that stay negative? If it does, that storm track stays just to our south. Or does it become neutral, where those storms affect our area like they did in November? And that's what we're anticipating for March and April. So let's see how that pans out, but that's the way it looks right now, Bridget.
There'll be a little bit coming on. Speaking of things that we're going to watch to see how they pan out, tomorrow is Giving Hearts Day. If y'all haven't had a chance yet to go choose from well over 600 charities and pick your favorite one, they are all excited to work with you. And it's not just about the dollars. It could be your time that you can donate. There's a number of things that you can do for Giving Hearts Day. And people fret that I don't have a lot to spare. I looked at some statistics that North Dakota FFA had put out. You know, as little as $7 helps to buy one of the gold awards that's given to students when they participate at the state level and earn top honors. So it can be just a little bit. It can be large if you want. It can be of your time, whatever you may feel. But Giving Hearts Day is tomorrow. We will have guests on who are charities that are involved in agriculture and who are part of Giving Hearts Day. So give them a listen and a little bit of your time.
Every little bit helps, right? Like you said, it doesn't have to be a lot.
They do. Every little thing helps. Now, interesting discussion. I probably should have had this with Scott before he left, but there's some work being done by Penn State where if you plant your corn and you've got corn in rows, and then the opportunity to come back when your corn's about V4 to V6, those two between those two vegetative states, which means the corn's about 18 inches tall, you could seed cereal rye in between the corn rows. So as the corn grows up and gets taller, you can take the corn off, the cereal rye comes up, really does a nice job of maturing. And then you could turn out your livestock to graze in there, and they could graze off the cereal rye. So it's a way of having almost three different cash crops available on that same acre.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, we want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon. For Bridget, myself, be sure to check us out tomorrow on Weather and Ag and Focus at 1. Don't go anywhere. Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.